Back to this afternoon now, and there's a movement gathering momentum for making vacant spaces bloom. Green-fingered individuals and groups are gardening in public parks and private plots, planting roadside verges, pavements, roundabouts and derelict sites with flowers and vegetables. And they're doing this without the permission of the owners, and often in defiance of the authorities. Toby Amos travels the length of the country to explore what lies behind this loving, if illicit, activity. And what motivates the passion for guerrilla gardening?
We've planted lots of seeds, medieval apple trees.
Leeks and red cabbages.
Daffodils strewn through it, including the native daffodils.
Goji berries, raspberries, loganberries.
Sunflowers, native wildflower mixes.
I planted apple trees. I planted three apple trees, and then someone nicked them, and it wasn't the council.
Roses, geraniums. I've gone for quite a lot of fragrance because it's a kind of counteract to the urine issue that we also get here.
We had a barbecue in London Fields. We planted passion flowers around the lamppost, and they curled up these old Victorian lampposts, and it was by moonlight. That was really beautiful.
Get a big heap of compost and be a friend to worms.
Near bus stops, little cracks in pavements, over fences. Anywhere is fair game, almost.
What's more British than gardening, except perhaps respect for property or a really good argument? It's inevitable that on small islands there'll be a vigorous discussion about the use of space. Guerrilla gardeners make that discussion physical, and they're united by their desire to see their environments bloom, whether the law allows it or not. Richard Reynolds, the author of a handbook on the subject, has been looking to put the power in flowers ever since he got his flat in London's Elephant and Castle.
I turned to guerrilla gardening because I had no garden of my own to garden. Right outside the tower block where I live, there was this grotty bit of public land. Nothing was done to this bed. And I thought, right, I'm just going to do it now. So it was opportunism and a sense that I was morally justified in doing this because no one else was. And then when you start gardening these public neglected places, you start seeing them in other places, and then the itch grows.
It's an international itch that's being scratched all over the world, in public and private spaces, books, websites, and even through reality TV, like this subtle show from Australia's Channel 10.
Deep in the urban jungle, a renegade army wages war, transforming urban eyesores without permission. The weapons, plants, soil and stealth. The potential risk, $1 million fines, even jail. My name's Dave and we are the Guerrilla Gardeners.
My name's Toby. Was this what the artist and environmental activist Liz Christie had in mind when she started gardening unofficially in the mean streets of 1970s Manhattan? Donald Loggins was one of the original green guerrillas.
In the 70s, we were very radical. I mean, taking over city property, it was sort of like squatting. At that time, the Lower East Side was really bad. There were drug dealers all over the street. There were buildings burnt down. There was garbage, crime, homeless all over the place. Liz Christie started it. It took about a year to clean out the lot, put in plants, material. And that was the first community garden in New York City.
When you started gardening in the space and started occupying the space, can you tell me what the initial reaction of the authorities was?
Initially, they didn't want anything to do with us. I mean, we were doing what the sanitation department should have been doing. Once we started getting started and the plants started growing, the city got a little upset. They sent in bulldozers. Liz Christie called the press, and that sort of stopped the bulldozers. They gave us a lease and they sort of institutionalized us. But then we moved on to other gardens, other places. We moved on to other parts of Manhattan. Then we went up to the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn. And what happened over the years, we pushed the city to give us first short-term leases, then long-term leases. And we're still fighting now to get them to turn it into official parkland. So it'll be a community garden forever.
If guerrilla gardening is a war, what's it a war against?
I think it's a war against concrete urban decay in the beginning, and now it's more of a war against development.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
The canny use of the media to market guerrilla gardening as a sexually subversive social movement has a lot to do with its current sprouting in the UK. It's perhaps no coincidence that Richard Reynolds has a day job in advertising. It's a great brand, but is it a threat to the social order, green-tinged anarchy, or just gardening?
We're in the centre of the North Roundabout at the Elephant and Castle, and in front of us is a Chevron sign. But beneath that is my most risky guerrilla garden, which is thriving now, 2 years on. This is the place where the police threatened to arrest us.
Why?
They were concerned that we were gardening in a place we shouldn't be, and rather than being arrested, I stopped. And then went back an hour and a half later and carried on.
So under what law did they challenge you then?
This was criminal damage.
And no one's actually been prosecuted yet, but the guerrillas have still developed defensive strategies, including an arsenal with a sense of the absurd. The artist and speculative designer Vanessa Hardin has created a portfolio of weird weaponry for the subversive gardener.
OK, so what have you just taken out of the box here? That looks like a camera.
Yeah, it does look like a camera, but in fact, this piece is actually used to target areas that are out of reach, so I'll demonstrate it quickly. So you just heard a seed being projected 15 to 20 meters away. And of course, there's a spirit level on the side of the camera that will allow you to get a better trajectory.
So what's in there?
Well, it's actually a seed that's in sugar glass. It's tongue-in-cheek. To create a set of tools such as these makes people think, why do you actually need these tools? Is it illegal? And yes, it is illegal.
It's to make it look a little bit ridiculous in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a passive protest.
But what's it a protest against?
It's a protest against the unuse of private land. Living in a city that could be more beautiful and not being allowed to beautify it.
But in an atmosphere of paranoia about terrorism, how well does it serve a movement which is about gardening to use the terminology of revolution? Richard Reynolds.
The writing of Mao and Che Guevara about their guerrilla tactics, taking on this land, holding on to it, persuading people to support you in your initiatives, are actually very useful for us.
But if it is a war, who's the enemy?
We live on a planet with finite resources. My target is the neglect of that finite resource and making the most of it, whether that's making it more beautiful or more productive or healthier, or as a source of community spirit and fun. To me, the enemy who's human is the one who decides that that neglect is not for us to worry about at all, for them to deal with in their own time. And that's when I find myself challenging them, and it does become a battle between people, whether that's a local council or transport authority or some other kind of landowner.
And the responsibility for the use of public land in Richard Reynolds's home patch falls on Councillor Barry Hargrove. He's in charge of transport, environment and recycling for the London Borough of Southwark.
We don't want to get in the way of creativity, but everything that happens in the public realm is something that the council does need to have a consideration of. We have to pay for things when things go wrong. We have to account to local people when they're not happy about what happens in the public realm. I think it's about the message that we might be sending out if we said to everybody, go ahead. We obviously understand the principles, but maybe in practice there may be some health and safety issue, whether there's already plans in the pipeline, maybe the flowers are okay for a while and then they wilt and they got trampled over and it may encourage other people to throw litter there, or there may be some damage to the public realm. There are instances I can think of where we might want to actually step in and say, no, we can't allow this.
And if it comes to war, you'll need ammunition. Darren sells the appropriate hardware made in his designer studio in Glasgow via his website, Kabloom.
One of the weapons for a guerrilla gardener is seed bombs. Essentially, it's the idea of having a little unit, a ball of compost, clay and seeds that you can throw. Now, that means you can throw them over fences, you can throw them wherever you like, really, to the areas that need a bit of brightening up. So it's a kind of quick, direct action. And one of my designs as a designer is a seed bomb, but it's a seed bomb with a difference, and it uses recycled materials as well as your compost and flower seeds, but it's in the shape of a grenade. So it has a kind of subversive side to it. It's a grenade, but it's a friendly grenade. It's a bomb, but it's a friendly bomb.
Time to take the struggle to the streets as we join Richard Reynolds and his troops for International Tulip Planting Day. The battleground? South London.
So the plan is we're going to put the tulips in, and then we're going to go along Borough Road, St George's Circus, and then up to Blackfriars.
We're in the middle of the Elephant and Castle roundabout. It's dark. I'm planting tulips.
I'm a keen gardener, but I like the gorilla bit, sort of showing that you can actually still work outside the box.
Why do we feel we have no right to do this? Of course we have right. It's our land just as much as it's Blooming Castle land.
A very pleasant sound of the siren disappearing into the distance.
But not all guerrilla gardening takes place in the urban jungle.
I'm Margaret Forbes Hamilton, chairman of Friends of the Churchyard in Torquay, in sunny Devon. This little patch is lovely. Old broken gravestones put in a quarter circle and flatten the ground. It is a closed churchyard. The council responsible for the churchyard, their programme of work was 6 grass cuts a year and 2 men for 2 days. And that was it. It was virtually derelict. There were trees growing out of graves. There was ivy, bindweed and bramble. It became the haunt of every shoplifter, drug user and alcoholic in the bay. I moved into my house about 7.5 years ago and I started walking my dog in here. And I decided I would sneak in here with my secateurs, and that was the start of it all. We've got thyme, chamomile, feverfew, wild mint, alpine strawberries, backed up by the native edible hedgings, rose hips, and you can't see the sloes because we picked them all. The gin's brewing very nicely. I love a bit of guerrilla gardening. It's actually changed my whole life. But I don't do it in the dark like they do in London. I just go out in the broad daylight and people say, oh, what are you doing? I said, well, council don't employ enough gardeners. Let's face it, we all like doing something that's a little bit devious, but if something beautiful's coming out of it, what does it matter? Right, bureaucracy might like it, but you'll have the backing of the local residents who are going to see it every day. People love it, and that's what matters, is the man in the street and the dog in the churchyard.
But if it all seems a bit nice for a real revolution, there are gardening guerrillas who claim descent from the radical squatting movement at the end of the English Civil War.
You noble diggers all, stand up now, stand up now. You noble diggers all, stand up now.
The diggers were inspired by the writings of the Christian communist Gerard Winstanley. The basic idea was to use common land for common good. Professor Malcolm Chase specialises in the study of radical agrarianism at the University of Leeds.
In a sense, this notion of getting back to the land is not just a practical economic process of putting yourself in touch with the means of growing your own food, but it's also a powerful political statement about taking back something which, it was believed, had originally been given to all mankind by God. I think you can go back beyond the diggers to the medieval period and you can see a kind of green thread running through British popular politics, which sees the land as something different, and there is something morally repugnant about letting it go to waste. There is a great British preference for land to be cultivated. You only have to look at the popularity of allotments, of flower arranging, of gardening. As a culture, I think the British are much less censorious of those who might see a patch of land and decide to plant it. So I think there's a long, authentic and enduring tradition of alternative land-orientated political engagement that links the current movements back to Winstanley.
And contemporary radical politics have also used the techniques of planting to make a political point. The term guerrilla gardening encompasses a broad spectrum of both opinion and technique.
Protesters against capitalism are gathering in central London for the culmination of 4 days of demonstrations.
are an amalgam of groups united in their opposition to capitalism, groups such as Class War, the Anarchists Federation, and this group Reclaim the Streets, who are certainly now successfully reclaiming Parliament Square.
In 2000, on May the 1st, hundreds of people took over Parliament Square and some guerrilla gardening took place. Apple trees were planted. I heard there was lion dung. The most iconic moment of that day was an ex-British serviceman clambering up the statue of Churchill and placing a Mohican on his head made out of turf. More flower arranging, I think, than gardening. But it's all part of this loose movement. Whether the point of guerrilla gardening is the gardening or making a point depends on which guerrilla gardener you speak to. Now, for me, it's about the gardening.
Rather than using permanent graffiti to make a point, there's something poetic about spraying it with flowers, as when satirist Hayden Prowse made a florid statement about the abuse of expenses on an MP's lawn, publishing the results on the website don'tpaniconline.com.
OK, so we're going to go and see Anne Duncan today, who's MP for Rutland and Melton, who was exposed in the Telegraph on Monday for claiming almost £4,000, almost £5,000 actually, on his gardening expenses. I'm making a pound sign in his lawn. Oh, what's this? It's a money tree. Alan Duncan has been claiming £5,000 for his gardening. Taxpayers' money. He had a money tree in his garden all along.
Guerrilla gardening's most likely to develop from a quick skirmish into a war of attrition when it's on private rather than public land. I visited a site in Brighton to hear a tale of a vacant lot that turned from a wasteland to a local paradise to a boarded-up wasteland and a legal hell for its owners.
I'm standing outside the site of the Lewis Road Community Garden, which is a good example of how the discussion about the use and ownership of land that guerrilla gardening brings up can turn into an argument. I've come here to meet Duncan Blinkhorn, who is one of the co-founders of the community garden. So, Duncan, can you tell me what's behind this big bit of plywood there?
Right, well, now it's a big empty space with a couple of security guards waiting for something to build there. But for the last year, it was a thriving community garden full of flowers and plants and benches and people communing. It had been a derelict site, formerly a petrol station, for about 5 or 6 years until a group of local people in May last year moved onto it to turn it into a garden.
And what was the reaction of the people who owned the land?
One of the local councillors got in touch with the owners, who I don't think knew anything about all of this. And actually, we don't mind you being on the land. You're welcome to be on the land while we're not using it. And that was really nice and went down very well.
But then things changed.
Well, then people got wind that it was going to be turned into a Tesco store and bring a kind of blandness to the space. There was a very vociferous opposition to that and a campaign of keeping Tesco out and stopping this development. In the end, they came in the night and about 2 o'clock in the morning and bulldozed the lot.
They were the developers, Auburn Retail. Nigel Kinnaird described the experience from their point of view.
Broadly, we were receptive. We said, look, we're quite happy to cooperate with the community, but strictly on the basis that it was a very casual arrangement. And when it was well known that we would develop the site, any pots, benches, plants, whatever was on the site would be removed and we would have access to our site.
Then it went wrong. Was this due to some sliding notion of ownership?
There came a point where we went through the planning process, which is an open, transparent process, giving ample notice for the gardeners to remove their equipment so we could then get on site and start our development. Subsequently, since we've had a long process in seeking possession of our site back through the courts and through a very messy process of bailiffs and repossession, we have to point the finger at the gardeners, and I think my message to any developer who is approached by gardeners would be caution, and I think that's a great tragedy.
And what does the gardening establishment make of this? Are the guerrillas also hijacking the institution of gardening by hijacking unused space? I asked the award-winning landscape designer, Bunny Guinness, for the professional's view.
I think guerrilla gardening is to sort of sex it up a bit. I think that is a lot of the appeal, the fact that they're not allowed to do it. They do it at dawn or dusk or at night. There's lots of places where if you want to garden on someone else's land, you can do it with their permission. And then you have a long-term interest and everybody's happy. And you can get far more out of it than if you just dive in, chuck in a few annuals.
From an expert's point of view, what are some of the dangers of going and seeding a piece of land without investigating?
You might be doing it and the next day the diggers could be coming in to put foundations in for a new development. You might well be wasting your time and money. If you go and sow seeds and they're going to break the visibility splays for cars, then the local authority, the highways, are going to rip them out. If you're going to affect drain runs, if you're going to affect services, cables, you know, all these little things you have to know about to get it right. And I just think sometimes it's inappropriate. You know, if you want to keep this country like it is, you don't want masses of exotic things that are inappropriate in the wrong places. You might be upsetting a very interesting ecosystem that's developing of its own accord.
As a member of the gardening establishment, if you'll accept the term, do you feel that you're forced into a position by guerrilla gardening, particularly the sort of revolutionary terminology it uses?
Conflict is their whole thing, isn't it? Conflict and getting noticed. I don't think they would like it nearly so much if we said, lovely, everyone sat back and said, lovely, carry on, do it, we love it. I think they'd give up and go home.
Maybe the terminology of conflict isn't always helpful in creating a consensus. But there's a fifth column in the establishment who might help everyone get along.
What's nice about guerrilla gardening is that it is an alter ego. You can live a respectable life and just plant a few things on the roundabout. You don't have to be an anarchist, it's just an alter ego that you can enjoy.
Christopher Woodward is director of the Garden Museum in London, and he also lists guerrilla gardening under his interests in Who's Who.
We live in this highly regularised planned society. We have particularly strong planning controls, and every time somehow we do something that is spontaneous and classless, it's considered to be in bad taste. Lots of councils don't actually like flowers, that's another thing. We've reached a point in public parks where there's so little money to actually love and cherish and look after flowers. It's all about machines and mowing and cutting. That's why we have this part landscape of lots of curvy shrubs. The last piece of guerrilla gardening I did was in London Fields, near where I live in Hackney, and we planted some passion flowers around three lampposts, and I watered them every night for 2 or 3 weeks. When I came back from holiday, they were gone, because Hackney Council's put them somewhere.
Oh, so you think it's the council?
It's definitely the council, because they said it gets in the way of maintaining the lampposts. But also, they kind of find it annoying, I think. They find it annoying that someone's come into their park and they want you to donate it to them, but they just find it annoying, I guess. It's about how you feel about the city you live in. If you plant some primroses around the base of a tree outside your house, or put something in a park, or plant some shrubs, it just suggests that you want to change your city beyond the boundary of your private ownership. And I think the other attractive thing, which is why it's so zeitgeisty, it's guerrilla gardening, but it's also community gardens. It's spontaneous memorial shrines. It's people expressing themselves as individuals.
Gardening can change our experience of a space in the same way that art can, and ideas can grow like seeds.
So we're standing on a very noisy Bow Road with the artist Paul Harfleet, and we're about to do a very specific bit of guerrilla gardening on a very bare piece of soil.
It's called the Pansy Project, and I plant pansies wherever I've experienced abuse or wherever other people have experienced abuse. It's kind of developed to me planting large-scale installations at various locations where people have been killed as a result of homophobic hate crime. I planted 3,000 on the South Bank where David Morley was killed at Hungerford Bridge.
And did the idea for the project come through a discovery of guerrilla gardening?
I was realising that I wanted to change the area that I'd experienced the abuse just by planting a flower at that site. It's almost like an activism, raising awareness of this homophobic hate crime on the street.
So when you're doing this work, what do you think of yourself as?
Well, I am an artist, primarily. And I suppose I'm accidentally an activist. I don't think I'm really a gardener. Even though we entered the Hampton Court Flower Show with a conceptual garden and we got a gold medal, so I suppose I am a gardener.
Why pansies?
Well, pansies have an obvious association with gayness. The word comes from penser, to think, in French, and it's because men who were homosexual were seen as thoughtful or effeminate. They're also not as delicate as they look. They can be trampled on and they can survive.
No matter where, the gardens we grow change our relationship to our environment and to the land itself. At the other end of the spectrum, and one that harks back to the diggers, we find Nick Green, who gardens with the incredible Edible Initiative in Todmorden in the Pennines.
I can see leeks and red cabbages and pak choi, squashes, strawberries.
Incredible Edible Todmorden is an attempt to ultimately make the town self-sufficient in food. The idea started from just planting bits and pieces here and there and has grown into what we call propaganda beds, where people are growing vegetables all over town, outside the police station, on derelict sites in the town centre. The fire station have a bed, but it's to share. It's not exclusively for own use.
Goji berries, raspberries, loganberries, lettuce, all sorts of herbs, sage, rosemary.
Guerrilla gardening, it was the start of something which has become a major movement. The vegetables that we produce, passers-by pick them, or the people that grow them pick them. So you can't put a big fence around it, and you can't put keep-off notices on. You can put a notice that says it's not ready yet, but not a notice that says don't eat it, because you're growing food to share. And that thing where you grow something but you're allowing other people to take it is a difficult thing to get used to. We want to do that thing where people talk to each other and people give each other things and people look after each other. We haven't wanted to preach about how terrible things are going to get, but there is that worry. At very least, the economics of everything is going to change quite drastically. We need to be ready for that.
It says something about the inclusive nature of the guerrilla gardening movement that it can draw from the ideas of a Christian communist, Mao, anarchism, and appear to bloom in Tory party policy.
I'm intrigued about how this new buzzword of big society might change the reaction of the officials that I encounter. It is a big shift for institutions that traditionally have seen these public spaces as their responsibility to begin to let go.
And there are signs that the authorities are becoming fertile ground. Barry Hargrove of Southwark Council.
Yeah, I certainly think our attitudes are changing. The aspirations of guerrilla gardeners are something that we can support. We too want to see the public realm beautified, and therefore we believe that we should be working more closer together with the guerrilla gardeners. We can learn from them and they can learn from us.
Can coalitions ever succeed, though? Especially ones between authority and the guerrillas attacking it. Will an agreement with the establishment co-opt the revolution? Will guerrilla gardening lose its power to challenge social boundaries and just become another branch of horticulture? The movement's future lies in its ability to grow and adapt. But it's always up to the individuals who make up the community to choose where they stand between gardener and guerrilla.
I love plants, but I like them to be seen and to be thriving, not to be strangled or ignored.
Gardening needs its guerrillas because it's about expanding what we mean by gardening, both where it's done, who it's done by, and why it's being done.
It is gardening. It just happens to be the sites you choose aren't necessarily your sites, and they're someone else's sites.
Public spaces are owned and not made to look nice, and we're the ones who have to look out our windows and see them. So therefore, we're going to do something about it, and we're going to make them beautiful.
Guerrilla Gardeners was presented by Toby Amos and produced by Mike Greenwood. It was a peer production for BBC Radio 4.